Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The appointed hour having arrived, we're going to start committee. We don't have a quorum yet, so we cannot call a committee to order, but we can go ahead with a few other things that need to be done. First, I would like to have a chance for our pages to introduce themselves. We now have permanent pages in our committee, and I'd like Kevin and Micah to come forward and tell us just a little bit about yourself and how happy you are to be with this committee.
My name is Kevin. I interned with the other body last session, and indeed I am very happy to be here.
Thank you. Micah.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Micah Cornier. I'm also very happy to be here and working on this committee with all you guys.
Thank you both for being here. I think we have mostly experienced members that know how to treat the pages properly. They're good people. With that, we will go ahead and get started with the presentation. I'll probably be interrupting you. Here comes, are we up to quorum now? We're just counting. Oh, we got Pat and Joe.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you.
How can I help?
Just by being here, you're being a big help. Thank you. We have a quorum present. I'll call the meeting to order. We'll start with approval of the minutes.
So
Lieutenant Powell, we have moved approval of the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Very good. All the rigmarole is taken care of. We'll go ahead with the presentation from Minsky. Whoever wants to go first, please step forward and introduce yourselves for the record.
Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Elise Ristow, and I am a member of the Minsky Board of Trustees. I am also a recent graduate of Minnesota State University Mankato and now a current master's student there. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss our capital investment priorities with you today. We deeply appreciate your interest in our programs and our students, and we thank you for your past funding that this committee has provided. Thank you also, Representative Hausman, for your leadership. Today we have been asked to provide a brief overview as well as present our capital investment program. Joining me at the table are three representatives from St. Cloud Technical and Community College, President Joyce Hellens, faculty member Matt Heppner, and student in the Medium Heavy Truck Program, Mark Kruger. Our colleges and universities are places of hope and opportunity. They provide an opportunity for all Minnesotans to create a better future for themselves, their families, and their communities. We ensure access to an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans. We are the partner of choice to meet Minnesota's workforce and community needs, and we deliver to students, employers, communities, and taxpayers the highest value and most affordable education option. Minnesota State Colleges and Universities is a statutorily created entity. As such, its powers and structure are legislatively determined. The system is subject to legislative oversight and regulation. My fellow trustees and I represent all of Minnesota. Joining us today is Trustee also Margaret Anderson Kelleher. Minnesota State Colleges and University comprises 24 community and technical colleges, 7 universities across 54 campuses, and in 47 communities across the state of Minnesota. We are the largest provider of higher education, continuing education, and customized training in the state. And we are the 5th largest higher education system in the nation. We serve 410,000 students still in high school, right out of high school, adult learners, workers and professionals updating their skills or preparing for new careers. This includes 112 online students, 82% of all PSEO students in the state, and 6 out of 10 students attending our colleges and universities are in Greater Minnesota. 88% of our students are Minnesotans. When they graduate, they get jobs related to their fields, and they stay in Minnesota to work. I'd like to underscore that graduates of Minnesota State College and universities stay in Minnesota to work, and that's a very good thing, so we have the better educated workforce we need to compete globally. The facilities on our campuses play a critical role in preparing students with the foundational and technical skills Minnesotans need. Buildings are vitally important, but what's truly impressive about a building is what it means to students. A building's importance is all about the effect it has on students and the opportunities they have for learning. The building provides the laboratories, the classrooms, the simulation areas, and the study space needed to prepare students for the future to help keep Minnesotans prosperous. Today, we would like to share an example of the direct impact that this committee has had on our student success. Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, with your permission, I would like to ask President Joyce Hellens of St. Cloud Technical and Community College to say a few words and introduce her guests from the college.
Thank you, Ms. Bristow. I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment. Members, if you have questions, we will be interrupting the speakers as we go, so get the attention of our staff, and we will make sure the questions get asked. And I should also welcome a former speaker to the audience. Margaret Anderson Kelleher is with us today. She says she's here for support. I assume that's the support of the testifiers, or perhaps the chair. I'm not sure which. Thank you for being here. Please go on with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Torkelson, members of the committee. We get the fun part. We're honored to be here, and we're extremely proud to tell you briefly about a stellar and very successful program at our college that would have been shut down had it not been for capital investment. I'm talking about the St. Cloud Technical and Community College medium heavy truck and auto body expansion and renovation project, which was funded through the fiscal year 2012 bonding funds. I have with me today my faculty, Mark Kruger is our student, and they're going to be giving their own perspective in a moment, also briefly. And as we all know, transportation in Minnesota, as well as nationally, it's big business and it's important business. It was with that in mind that the program was started back in the early 70s, probably for about a dozen technicians. What happened, it grew very quickly. The decades passed, and the facility just became old and tired. Now, with a lot of things that improved, like technology, things got smaller. But with the big trucks, they got bigger. The engines got more complex. They had a lot of computers in them, and we couldn't even fit them in our facility. Hence, they would stay outside. During the winter, they would freeze. We'd have to take the engines out. They'd have to bring them in to thaw. It was really an untenable situation and not a safe one. So here's what happened and what's so exciting. We knew there were many needs out there, so our initial request was for $9 million, and we got that down to $4 million. We compromised on space, but we really maximized efficiency, and we had amazing results. The next year, our enrollment increased. We have about 70 FYE, and our retention and our job placement increased to 100%. Our industry partners then, so excited about a state-of-the-art facility, invested over $111,000 in the program. Maney International, Gator Volvo, gave us semi-tractors. Freightliner gave us a new engine. Granger gave us classroom technology. The SCTCC Foundation gave us equipment for the new shop. And then another neat thing happened. The investments were used with leveraged equipment that was made available by the legislature, and we purchased more additional equipment for the current academic year. But it even gets better. Prior to the new addition, the program brought in about $9,000 worth of what's called live work. That's where someone actually brings their truck that they use for their own business, and the students repair them, and they get the feel of the real life of the job. In FY13, that went to $28,000. In FY14, it went to $38,000, and this year, it's estimated to be $50,000 in revenue. That will go directly back to the program for the purchase of additional instructional equipment and supplies. I want to emphasize that this stellar program that you can tell that we're very proud of is really just one star in the constellation of MinSCU programs that are funded and that need help. And on behalf of all of our colleges and universities, and all of those colleges of applied learning, that's very close to my heart, I want to thank you for keeping Minnesota moving in the right direction. And now Matt and Mark team are going to talk a little bit about why this student is here, and also you'll feel that infectious excitement too from them. Matt?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
Please introduce yourself.
Sorry. I am a medium-heavy truck instructor, Matt Heppner. I do appreciate giving us the time to come down here and tell our story about the accomplishments that we have in our program. And how it's really affected what we do. I'm lucky enough to teach with all this stuff right now with great students just like Mark. I got one of many. It was tough to make a decision who was going to choose to come down here, but Mark was the reason why we brought the truck down, because he got it fixed. We had the ability to get that full unit in yesterday and get it fixed. The turbo went out on it, and Mark was the one of the technicians that finished it up, so that's one of the reasons why I brought him up. He's one of our hardest working students, and they all work really hard. We are like a family down there, but just to exemplify the kind of culture that we have in our program, is just it's coming from these small towns around the St. Cloud area. I mean, that's the kind of students that we get, and the hard work, that whole ethics of hard work and culture, I mean, we're very proud of. But Mark, introduce yourself.
I'm Mark Kruger. I'm from Rice, Minnesota. It's just north of St. Cloud. Grew up with a family, lived on a farm. I've worked with a bus company since 13, so that's why I was interested in the heavy duty program at the tech college. The reason I picked St. Cloud Tech, the new facility was the main reason I wanted to go there. What's something better than a new place, brand new facility, never been worked in? So that's why I chose it. It's 15 minutes away from home. This is my second year. I'll be graduating in May. The amount of equipment that we have and the life work, all I've worked on is trucks that people use every single day. It's not a truck that, you know, the teachers break or, you know, do something wrong and then we have to figure it out. It's live work. It's what I'll be doing in the real world. I have to learn ordering parts, the interaction with the customer, asking what's wrong, figuring out, diagnosing. Anybody can tell you what's broken with something, but figuring it out and preventing it is what they push the most, and that's the most important. That's what makes you a mechanic. So,
Mark, how old are you?
I'm 19.
Mark's been working for over 6 years already at a bus company.
So.
And Matt, would you like to say one more thing about our collaborations with industry partners?
Absolutely. Mark's just like, he was talking about the live work and stuff. I mean, this is my fourth year being faculty at St. Cloud Technical Community College, and I was in the midst of all this happening. And like President Helms said, the things have changed so much. Our industry's changed. Our students have changed. The way we have to do the jobs, I mean, a lot of people think that diesel mechanics are these big, grubby people, but really everything's changed. Technology has changed the way we do things. And industry has really helped us get on the right track. They've gave us great, great support, resources, funding, tools, equipment. It's just great to be around this with everybody's help. And, I mean, like I said, our advisory board is very strong. Our industry is very strong. And that's why we have these students getting placed. I mean, 100% placement, you know, and there's always more, and we're growing, and it's good to be on that upswing. And I'm glad to be a part of it, and I do thank everybody in this room to help us be on the right path here.
Matt is also a graduate of Alexandria Technical and Community College, and then he finished a bachelor's degree, went to Southwestern and St. Cloud State. So we're just a Minskew family sitting here, and thank you so much for your time. We're going to turn this over to Chancellor Rosenstone.
Thank you. Before you go, I understand you have a truck here today.
Yes, we do. We have a very big truck right in front of the Capitol.
So can we go for a test drive? Or?
Well, you could beep the horn.
I've got a Class A license, you know.
Hey, there.
Representative Howe has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, and thanks for coming up here. I know we've got a long history of working together. How many students are in the classroom, and how many are graduating this year? You say you got 100%, so what does that look like? What does that, as far as new students coming in, what does that prospect look like?
Our program starts with 24 students. The last 2 years, I'm proud to say that our retention has been 100% as well. And we, right now, we almost sometimes have to lock doors. We have so much industry looking for our guys. We are very sought after, trained, skilled technicians when they leave the school with their diploma or degree. And they want, I mean, big companies, whether it be Knife River, Ziegler, you know, ATS, Freightliner, it's a whole, so many different industry partners that we have that they really want to get technicians, because there is going to be shortages of technicians, and it is growing. It's as our industry gets bigger, the amount of technicians that, you know, we're able to get out there, we're trying to do the best to, you know, it is 100% placement right now.
And we do have a waiting list for fall. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So,
follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The size of the class?
Sorry, 24 a year. We start 24, so one given day you're going to have about 48 people down in that shop. First and second year is a two-year program. So every given day you come down there, and some of you guys have visited. It's 48 people are working and trying to get trucks in and out, but we start 24 a year.
Well, thank you for your presentation. Since you won't let me drive your truck, maybe I can bring mine up and you can fix it someday.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Tice has a question for
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just be remiss if I didn't say that I am so extremely proud to have you all here today. As a graduate of the St. Cloud Technical and Community College, not with trucks and computers, I'm just very, very, very proud of all the work that you do and the partnerships that you have. I was honored to be at the opening of the area, and it's any one of us could go in there when they talk about how clean it is. None of us would feel like we were going to get dirty or greasy or anything. It is an incredibly clean place, but not only that, you get to see the partnerships that you forged in the trucks that were there. And I think the scariest thing was the truck that was up on, it wasn't a lift, it's like stilts. And everybody's walking underneath it, and that's incredibly scary to this person. But just to also know about the partnerships when we talk to the folks in the area, I know we heard a gentleman from Freightliner talking about how they relied on your program and getting folks to come and work in their areas because they are having some issues with workforce. And so I'm just extremely proud, and I would talk about this forever if I could, because not only is it a very, very wonderful place to visit, but just talking with the students, it's just a happy place to be. Everybody is so incredibly glad to be there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome, gentlemen. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Rosenstone. I'm Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I'd like to begin by thanking Trustee Rastow and President Helens. Since the beginning of the hearing, we've also been joined by Trustee Mariah Otterson, a member of our Board of Trustees as well. I want to welcome her. I'd like to also briefly introduce you to several of our presidents who are here today. You've met, of course, President Joyce Helens already, but also with us is President Ron Anderson from Century College, President Sue Collins from the Northeast Higher Education District, the set of colleges up on the range, 13,000 square miles of territory she covers as president of those colleges, and also Dr. Annette Parker, president of South Central College in North Mankato, and I'm very pleased they could join us as well today. I would like to also introduce, for those who have not already met her, Vice Chancellor of Finance and Chief Financial Officer Laura King, whom you'll be working closely with over the year as well. I'd like to also echo what Trustee Rastow said at the outset of her comments by beginning to say thank you. Thank you for your support of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you today a little bit more about our students, about the communities we serve across Minnesota, about our capital needs. In this slide, you see that nearly 6 out of 10 of all undergraduate students in the state of Minnesota are enrolled in one of our colleges and universities. And of course, you met one of those students today, Mark, who's described very briefly to you his journey to an exciting career, a career that's going to yield full employment for him over the course of his life, given the growth of that industry here in Minnesota. These students are served by about 17,650 remarkably talented faculty and staff. You met one of those faculty members today, and you got a sense of his passion and commitment to his students and their growth. These faculty deliver about 3,700 academic programs across the state, including 522 programs online. And each and every year, we award over 40,000 certificates, degrees, including associate degrees, bachelor's degrees, and graduate degrees. We are very proud of the students we serve and very proud of the different kinds of students we serve. This past year, we served 52,500 first-generation students, the first in their families to go to college, 62,000 American Indian students and students of color, 99,000 low-income students, Pell-eligible students, and over 11,000 veterans, roughly twice as many as we served 5 years ago. And it's important to point out that in each and every one of these categories, our colleges and universities serve more students than all the other higher education providers in the state of Minnesota combined. That's our commitment. I think the other thing you need to know about our students is that they're older than your stereotype of a college student, and they're juggling very complicated lives. Average age is about 26. They have full-time jobs and often a second job on top of that. They're tied to place because of their families and because of their jobs. And they all don't have the flexibility that some 19-year-olds do of throwing everything in the trunk of the car after they graduate, driving 300 miles, moving into the dorm, and going off to a college or a university. We serve a different kind of student. But these are the students that need to be prepared for the jobs of the future, and that's a commitment that we make in our colleges and universities. Students of color, American Indian students, are going to comprise a larger and larger portion of our student body over the years ahead. They're going to comprise a larger and larger portion of Minnesota's workforce. And as a result of the Great Recession, our student body has grown 100% through its growth in Pell-eligible students. We're larger than we were prior to the recession beginning, and all of that growth is among Pell-eligible students. We are serving a larger number of families, students from families with very modest financial means than all the other education providers combined, and that has grown. Graduates of our colleges and universities are Minnesota. Our graduates build our homes and roads and bridges. They manage our buildings. They teach our children. They care for our sick. They are the first responders who are there when tragedy strikes. They keep our plants humming. They farm the land that feeds all of us. They are our parents, our friends, our children, and they are the fabric of our state. 9 out of 10 mechanics in Minnesota graduate from one of our colleges or universities. 9 out of 10 employed in manufacturing, 8 out of 10 in law enforcement, 7 out of 10 in the trades, 7 out of 10 in agriculture, 3 out of every 4 nurses graduate from one of our colleges or universities, 1/2 of all the teachers, 1/2 of all the business graduates, 1/2 of those in information technology. Put differently, our graduates lead in every sector of Minnesota's economy and every corner of the state of Minnesota. And as Trustee Ristow said just a few moments ago, buildings on a campus are absolutely critical, but what's really important is what those buildings enable our faculty to do for students, and what they enable our students to learn so that they can do remarkable things once they graduate. So, Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, with your permission, I'd like to now turn the presentation over to Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities, to walk you through the specifics of our request.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Brian Yolitz. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the MinSCU system. And as you've heard, we provide access, partnerships, and deliver value to Minnesota and over 410,000 students through our 54 campuses in 47 communities across the state. The campuses total 28 million square feet of space. That's roughly 5 miles of America entrusted to our colleges and universities but they're just located in 54 different locations across our great state. 80% of our total facility space is academic in nature and eligible for capital bonding. The balance includes residence halls, dining facilities, student unions, wellness centers, and parking ramps, which are not funded with state monies. They are fully funded by user fees through our revenue fund, and again, not through state resources. The vast majority of our academic space was built prior to 1975 and is now past 40 years of age. And as our facilities and individual mechanical systems and infrastructure systems grow in age, so does the need for investment. Our annual facility assessment estimates that the deferred maintenance costs and the anticipated asset preservation needs over the coming 5 years of our academic space totals $1.2 billion. The age, condition, and utilization of our existing academic space and its alignment with college and university programs drive our capital investment priorities. With such a large and complex portfolio of facilities, it is important we understand and have a process in place that recommends that the most urgent needs get addressed. This chart walks you through how Minnesota State Colleges and Universities prepares and interacts with this Minnesota's capital budget system and the legislative process. Today, we are in the process of executing the design and construction work funded during the 2014 legislative session. We are also in the process, what we call program development phase, of our 2016 program. This process for 2016 started in early 2014, where our board approved guidelines that provide direction to our colleges and universities on their priorities and expectations. Key among these are alignment with our strategic framework of access, partnership, and value, strategic regional and statewide academic program focus, taking care of the facilities we have and the space we have in need, minimizing new square footage, and building flexible and adaptive space. Since then, our colleges and universities have reviewed their comprehensive facility plans and developed pre-designs for their academic capital needs. These pre-designs were reviewed and refined over the summer and fall of 2014, and earlier this month at St. Paul College just up the road, the 2016 Canada projects, both new and projects that were not fully funded in the prior legislative sessions, and that arrow depicted in blue, were reviewed and scored by nearly 100 system personnel representing our colleges and universities from an array of functional areas, including finance, HR, IT, facilities, deans, and faculty. We even had one president and a former state senator participate in the process. This process rated projects based on their alignment with the board's guidelines. We are now preparing a recommendation for review by our leadership council, made up of our college university presidents and system leaders, in preparation for board action in this coming May and June. From there, the board approved projects will go into Minnesota's capital budget system that was outlined by Commissioner Franz and Assistant Commissioner Hansen just a week ago. From there, our projects will be integrated with those of other state agencies and reviewed by both the House and Senate Capital Investment Committees this fall as you tour the various requests around the state in preparation for the 2016 legislative session. I look forward to seeing you at many of our campuses this fall to meet and talk with our students, to learn about our facilities and the programs that they enable. This process produced the priorities you funded in 2014. We thank you on behalf of the students these facilities serve for the support this committee provided last session. You approved $159.8 million in capital program that included $42.5 million in HEPR and asset preservation work at 32 campuses and $78.2 million of GEO funds that is being combined with $39.1 million in system resources to execute design and construction work at 19 campuses across the state. As an update, as of January 1 this year, we have contracted roughly 30% of our HEPR funds, and that number is rapidly accelerating as we move towards the upcoming construction season. Our goal is for all HEPR funds to be expended by the end of September of this year. Of the capital projects, nearly 50% of the funds have been contracted. Five projects funded for construction only are either under construction or being reviewed. The bids are being reviewed at this time. Those priorities that were funded for both design and construction are deep into the design process to be ready for award for construction this spring and summer. Finally, five projects that were funded predominantly for design for future work to be funded through future bonding process or through the State Designer Selection Board process and are deep into the design process, ready for funding when funds become available.
Mr. Yolitz, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. Members, in your packets, you do have spreadsheets that outline HEPA projects from, I forget the time frame, but going back, it looks like, to 2000 or so. So for those are for your information. You can review them at your leisure. Thank you, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our campuses are moving out smartly in partnership with our architects and engineers and general contractors. In short, we are effectively executing on each and every one of the projects you funded last session, and we thank you. To establish priorities for the 2015 session, the board directed that we review the priorities not fully funded in 2014. They took action late 2014, establishing their priorities for the 2015 session. And if funded, this work would move through their next phases of design and construction this summer. Three principles shaped our bonding request in 2014 and follow through to our 2015 priorities before you today. To provide practical learning spaces needed to increase student success and prepare students for jobs and careers. To reduce costs by improving the efficient use of our facilities and by replacing or eliminating obsolete space. And ensuring that Minnesota's workforce needs are met by graduates prepared for the jobs of the future, jobs that will keep communities across Minnesota globally competitive. Our request to meet these goals is by executing a $98.5 million capital investment program with $156.5 million in general obligation bond funds and $42 million in college university resources. This work includes asset preservation and demolition, as well as major capital projects at 15 campuses and communities. 90% of this priority investments are direct asset preservation through HEPA work and renovation, renewal, and repurposing and right-sizing of existing space. 12 of the 13 major capital investment projects are renovation and right-sizing focused. Only one of the 13 projects will increase our footprint. This priority at St. Paul College is specifically needed to better serve students in high-demand impact programs. All of the projects before you have been before the legislature last session. While the governor has not yet presented his bonding proposal, 8 of the 13 projects here were on his recommendation for 2014, and we are hopeful he will continue his strong support of higher education in Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. If this entire 15 request is fully funded, it increases debt service costs by roughly 63 cents per credit if the debt service is paid exclusively by tuition. This represents roughly 1/3 of 1% of the tuition and fees paid by the average college and university student for FY 2014 and 2015. Said another way, this average student with a total of 30 credits at a college university with capital projects would see about $18.90 of their annual tuition and fee rate set towards debt service associated with this program. Again, if the entire program were funded now and if the tuition was the only source of funds. For your information and scoping a bit, for 2015, payments of outstanding capital debt totaled $31.7 million, our debt service payment, which is roughly 2% of our general fund operating expenses. These are very conservative numbers, and debt service is met by both tuition and state appropriation, but it gives you a sense of where we are in terms of debt and impact on facilities and on our budget. Every project before you has been vetted through our capital development process and was before this committee in 2014. Pre-designs are all complete, and prior year investments for design and preparatory work is complete or well underway to being fully executed. The projects are ready to move to the next phase of designer construction. The 13 capital projects reflect work at 15 campuses in communities across the state. I mentioned this is capital request focuses on asset preservation, renewal, and repurposing of existing space in our academic areas. It's built on an investment strategy from our board that says catch up with the backlog of maintenance by cutting the backlog in half over a 10-year period. And to keep up with the anticipated maintenance needs as they come due. Colleges and universities deliver on this strategy through several avenues. First, our board has set a goal for our colleges and universities to invest $1 per square foot of local campus funds in our academic space. Over the past several years, campuses have met and exceeded that goal by investing nearly $30 million in campus funds in existing space. We invest a great deal of our own funds to take care of what we have. Put differently, any HEPR funds provided is being matched by our colleges and universities at a rate of more than $1 per square foot from their individual operating funds. The next avenue is through HEPR, and has always been the board's number one priority. Roughly 50% of our HEPR requests this session focuses on the building envelope, roofs and windows and doors. Roughly one-third is for HVAC systems, including boilers, air conditioners, air handling units and control systems, and energy efficiency measures. The balance addresses addresses electrical and plumbing challenges and corrects some code compliance issues and prepares us for the future HEPR programs. We also recognize that we cannot exclusively rely on HEPR funding to meet our asset preservation needs. We are pursuing alternative funding to address some asset preservation work through guaranteed energy savings contracts as managed by the Department of Commerce, where realized energy savings pay the costs of financing the facility work. This is happening at 3 universities and 6 colleges within our system. Finally, our major capital projects also play an important role in asset preservation and are part of our strategy. In addition to the HEPR work, our request preserves and improves over 540,000 square feet of existing academic space by investing nearly $180 million in renovation, renewal, and right-sizing. Our goal is to always walk away from a construction effort with a truly complete and usable facility. The 2015 capital investment priorities for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities address Minnesota's workforce needs. While these priority projects touch a wide range of academic and workforce programs, they predominantly focus on these 3 broad categories: academic facilities and space supporting manufacturing and the trades are enhanced with investments at college campuses in Jackson, Rosemount, Anoka, White Bear Lake, and Matamidi. Capital projects here in St. Paul and in North Mankato and East Grand Forks directly support educating and training Minnesota's health and medical workforce and scientists for tomorrow. The St. Paul College Health and Science Academic Center was funded in 2012 for design, and that design has been complete for a while. It's ready to go to construction now. Finally, preparing teachers and supporting student success is critical to building and sustaining a highly skilled workforce. Priority projects in Fergus Falls and Medina, Bemidji, Rochester, Hibbing, Winona, and St. Cloud host an array of programs to prepare teachers for tomorrow and help make students successful in today. Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to provide a high-level view of our system and our capital investment priorities for this session. Our request is straightforward: $156.5 million in general obligation funds to be combined with $42 million in state and university resources to execute a nearly $200 million capital investment program that impacts the entire state. These projects are tremendously important to our students, to the communities we serve, and to ensuring our students are prepared for the work they need to do when they graduate. These priorities are focused on creating a better future for Minnesota by preserving the academic facilities we have and need, and by creating the space Minnesota needs for the future workforce of our state. On behalf of Trustee Ristow and the rest of the board, Chancellor Rosenstone, our presidents, and our 410,000 students like Mark and from every corner of our state, we thank you for your support and attention this afternoon. We're ready to entertain any questions you may have.
We have kind of a quiet group this afternoon. Representative Runbeck, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about the involvement of any private money. I mean, I'm thinking of other campuses where you have the Annenberg School of Communications and, you know, naming buildings because people want their name on them. Do we do much of that in the Minsky system, and what's the policy?
Thank you.
Chair, Representative, there are some limits on naming of buildings in terms of geo-funded facilities and how that can be handled. We have to handle those on a case-by-case basis. I know we focus a lot, as you heard from President Helens, on outside funds helping us with the equipment on the inside to make sure we have the right technology and the right tools. So when a student leaves the classroom, the technical space, they see the same kind of thing in the workplace. And that's, I think, where we've been. I see our most benefit.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius has a question.
Thank you. In your testimony, you mentioned energy efficiency and passing. And, of course, one of the things we can look at is if you're very efficient now, your operating costs later will be a lot less. So tell us how you are approaching that and what kind of savings you expect from energy efficiency.
Sure.
Mr. Yolo.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've roughly have about a $33 million a utility bill, electrical and gas and such.
$33 million a year.
Mm-hmm. So we've embarked on several energy conservation measures. We're in the process of recommissioning, where often we find as things are put in place 10 or 15 years ago, we've haven't been able to keep the systems in check and running as efficiently as possible, so we'll go back. We reap a lot of benefit of that with a very limited investment. We're also looking at energy conservation through select projects, either funded by a campus level or through our HEPA program. We've done a lot of interesting stuff with lighting and some mechanical systems in the efficiency area. And also, we're partnering with the Department of Commerce through the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program to do some outside investment in replacing some of our equipment. We've seen, last year was a bit of a tougher year with the winter, but we've seen about an 8% reduction over the last 4 years in our energy consumption, and look to continue to do that and move that in a positive trend. We meet with the Department of Commerce, with all our state agencies, and try to meet the governor's goals of reducing by 20%.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. It would be helpful to see what your plan is for reduction, and I didn't hear anything about super insulating buildings or anything that tells me that we have a long-term commitment that feels more like we're nibbling around the edges. So maybe I'm wrong, so help me out here.
Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we our design standards meet the design standards for the state of Minnesota, which are called B3, we're trying to make our facilities have basically a zero impact by 2030. And that was a tall order, but that's the design standards that we're driving towards in terms of roof, insulation, envelope, and in terms of the quality of mechanical systems we have in place. And we can certainly get some more information on that program to you if that would be helpful.
Representative Wagenius, follow-up.
I think the most important thing you're driving toward it, that has no meaning to me, but what would be meaningful is to look at your $33 million a year energy consumption and say, by this year, we're going to have it down to this number, and the next year, we're going to have it down, and so that we actually can see what you are accomplishing. So I think that would be important, and this is the next generation of students. I expect this from you. This is not the
Mr. Chair, we can provide some of the energy consumption reduction processes we've done in the place and some of the metrics we have with the committee so they understand what we're doing.
Representative Ugolm has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm familiar with a lot of these facilities, and they're great facilities. But I do have one question. I see under the capital improvements here, we do have some monies in for the Fond du Lac Community College up there. How does that work? Do we manage that facility? Is it a partnership thing? How does that facility come under these requests.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we own and operate that facility. Okay. I think what's important, probably where the partnership really happens, well, actually where it does really happen, is where the academic programming and how that works. And I think, do you want to speak to that, Chancellor?
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Representative, Fond du Lac College is part of the Minsku system. The partnership is with the tribal communities, and that's a very deep and important partnership. But the college itself is one of Minsky's 31 colleges and universities. So it's managed the way it would be with St. Cloud Technical and Community College or Winona State University. The funds are made available to the campus to follow through on the program that they've identified as a priority.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Rundbeck's question about naming rights, so it might be interesting to get the story on the Tom Riccovina named building up in the Iron Range. I'd love to hear that story someday. There really is such a building, members, so we're all looking forward to which it is a big science building. So we're all looking forward to
which members, please refrain from making any untoward comments.
Chair Charkelson, Representative Hausman, I very much look forward to the occasion when we can have that conversation.
So, Mr. Chair, I think you made it clear, you made some reference to touring and future projects, but I think you were very clear that the projects in slides 20, 21, and 22 have been before us a number of, I think last year you in fact gave us a spreadsheet that showed how many times those projects had been brought to us, and we just never funded them. The backlog, I think, is there, and I just wanted to underscore that. That's what I understood you to say, that the projects on slides 20, 21, and 22 have been here on a number of occasions and have been before the legislature.
Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, indeed, all of them before the committee at least once, and some have been multiple times. I draw your attention to St. Paul College has been through here multiple times. Design funded in 2012. Not as lucky last session, but certainly, and you look at the halls of that facility and the number of students we're serving there, a project is ready to go. And I think there's others in that same category.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could just one more. I have already been free with my advice to both the Chancellor and the President of the University of Minnesota that one of the things that concerns me as the transportation plans go forward is a number of people who are advocating hundreds of millions in the case of one particular group, $200 million for local roads, $200 million for local bridges. And of course what we know is higher education has always been the biggest part of the bonding bill and would be most hurt by our starting to move in that direction with that funding source as one we depend more heavily on for transportation. And I didn't know if you've had an opportunity to look at some of those suggestions and whether you've anticipated the impact.
Commissioner Rosenstone.
Chair Torkelson, Representative Hausman, our directions from the board are to advocate for the projects that the board has identified as priorities for this bonding session. But not to advocate how the legislature ought to deal with the funding sources used for the various projects that you're wrestling with. So I will respectfully leave that to those on this side of the table, and we'll continue to share with you the important needs that our colleges and universities are confronting and how we're trying to serve our students.
And Mr. Chair, just concluding then, I mean, I think they tell the story very well about why we support that Minsky system, meeting Minnesota's workforce needs, which you've done on slide after slide, and how crucial that is to the economic health and competitiveness of our state.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yulitz, on slide number 21, you make note of South Central College and the STEM and healthcare renovation programs. I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on what renovation means with regard to the STEM and healthcare curriculums or the facilities that are used at South Central. And I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Yulitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, indeed, the work there at the renovation work would reconfigure space and upgrade some mechanical systems to allow for new and expanded STEM programs take place in existing facility space. They've got an atrium area that's underutilized, and they want to make that into some classroom space. And that's what that work's all about, is renovating the existing space to make it more adaptable, more flexible, and be able to deliver STEM programming at that college in North Mankato.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my follow-up question actually is for the Chancellor. Mr. Rosenstone, to that same point, I'm curious, with the dedication of so much of our time to workforce-ready skill sets and STEM and healthcare being one of those, but I think one of the underdogs that we don't talk a lot about is the trades. And I'm just wondering if you could share for the committee and for the people that listen to this what your vision or your commitment is to the trades on the technical college level.
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Right. Chair Torkelson and members of the committee, they're critical, absolutely critical to the future of our state. And if you go back to that list I read towards the beginning, we don't build Minnesota and sustain our roads and our buildings and facilities without being a partner in part with labor to ensure that we have people prepared in the trades to do that kind of work. In some cases, we're partnering with companies. In some cases, partnering with organized labor. In other contexts, we're partnering to retrain workers on new standards that get introduced and new technologies that come in, particularly in electrician and water safety and the like. Some of the projects that are before you are focused precisely on that, for precisely that reason. The House Higher Education Committee last week held its hearing at St. Paul College in a carpentry facility as a way to illustrate just how central that is to the work that we do. So it's absolutely critical. We pay very careful attention to what the high growth sectors are going to be in Minnesota over the years ahead, where we're going to have over the next 15 years close to 1.3 million retirements from the current workforce, and what we need to be doing to be ahead of the curve and make sure that the people with the right skills for the jobs of the future are going to be produced. And trades are an important component of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the Chancellor. And maybe even to the first testifiers, they came forward, talked about, you know, kind of how they really address their curriculum and using the new technology to, you know, serve the community as far as fixing trucks. And I was kind of thinking from the internal side, you know, we have trades as, we have majors as construction management and different design oriented majors. Have they ever played a portion in the actual design work of campus buildings or the construction of campus buildings? You know, just from a curriculum standpoint, internal looking inside, you know, playing a part of, other than paying for them through fees and whatnot and bonding, but has that ever been done or broached,
breached? Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, indeed, at some of our campuses there have been opportunities. Well, first of all, as part of the design process, our architects and engineers bring together a whole host of representatives from the college or university, faculty, staff, the physical plant operators who have to run it once it's built. They all have input. Oftentimes, students are part of that as part of their development, whether it's through the Student Senate opportunity that they do. They can serve on that design guiding committee. But there are some opportunities, yes. Does it happen at every college or university in terms of construction program or actual engineering, civil engineer program? I can't say for sure, but I do know that there are opportunities, and we take advantage of those when we can.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on the energy discussion earlier, you know, throughout the system, you've got a lot of infrastructure, and wondering about deploying community-based solar on some of your buildings and having with the net metering changes that we've allowed to actually going off the grid or paying back into the grid. I mean, you've got facilities everywhere, and as part of the HEPR or other, is there any plans for trying to become a little more energy sufficient? And then I would think some of the trades where you're working with the electricians, I mean, you could learn by doing on the facility. So just what any plans you've got going on with that.
Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, indeed, Representative Hansen, we've got a couple of those going on. Specifically, one to highlight would be the one at Anoka Ramsey in our Cambridge campus. Coon Rapids campus, excuse me, we're doing exactly that, installing a solar array, and then we're going to build an academic program that will support that. That's one of the ones kind of on the cusp of using that legislation that you outlined, taking advantage of that. Also, I know the Winona State University, their facilities director contacted us as Xcel Energy has approached them, or a consultant has approached them based on the community solar garden that you outlined. And so we're looking to do some more math on that and see how that works. But indeed, our colleges have been contacted. We're looking forward to participating in that.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies to the committee and to President Helens when I was not available to be here for your presentation, but this is specifically to the St. Cloud Technical and Community College. From the area of the state where Senators, or I should say Representatives Tice and Howe and I hail from is where the St. Cloud campus is. And I know from having worked in central Minnesota on job-related issues that your program has been very, very willing to step up and to customize training and to provide training programs and adapt your curriculum to be able to meet the needs of central Minnesota. And one of the things that you did today was you brought folks down from your driver training program, which I think is important. And if you've driven on the roads lately, you know there's a lot more truck traffic that's on the roads, and that's for a lot of different reasons. And those are very good paying jobs. We also have an increased amount of freight that is being moved by truck versus rail for, again, other reasons, increased tankers on trains and the like. I'd also like to call out the fact that we are still short of welders in the state of Minnesota and in central Minnesota, and I've had employers who've said as long as the person shows up for work and doesn't have bad habits, we'll train them ourselves. We just are in that desperate of need, and that was 7 years ago. I know you've worked on those programs as well to be able to help and adapt that. More specifically, and probably statewide, in May of 2012, the Versal paper mill had an explosion which basically rendered that facility inoperable, and the company closed and laid off over 300 workers. Many of those workers were able to take advantage of the programs that you have, the two-year technical college and community college, to be able to retrain themselves in something they weren't planning on having to do for many of them in their mid-careers. And many of them have actually found good employment and a good skill set at an affordable cost. And so I think that the technical colleges and the community colleges sometimes are under appreciated in the state of Minnesota. We always talk about MinSCU, where many people think of the four-year college or the University of Minnesota and the four-year college. But the technical colleges and community colleges play an essential role in the day-to-day activities of what we talk about and need here in the state of Minnesota. Both Representatives Albright and Swazinski talked about the importance of the trades that come through there, and those are going to be the backbone and continue to be the backbone of our economy. So I thank you, and I again, my apologies for not being able to be here to hear your presentation.
Thank you. I heard an apology, but no questions, so we'll move on. Representative Erdahl has a question, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I've actually got a comment and a question now because Representative O'Driscoll sent me off on a tangent that I'm going to pursue. Chancellor Rosenstein, one of the things that I will be doing some legislation on, I hope this session yet, deals with dual credits and transference of credits, a more seamless transfer of credits. I believe that there is there are some obstacles, and in dealing with especially vocational technical education and the trades, I think that pursuing a more seamless transference of credits and dual credits would be very beneficial. So I'm just warning you that advising you, I guess, that will be coming along. But what I wanted to ask in regards to a question is, Heaper, on your priority list as your number one priority, have you prioritized within that? Is it a list here somewhere, or what are your where can we access your Heaper priorities?
Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yernal, it's we've got a list in your packet, I believe, shows our list our entire list for all of our campuses.
Yeah, I saw that. Are they? Is that? It's alphabetical, though, I believe. Is
That's
it?
Correct. And we depending on how the process goes, we work with our campuses. Should the committee look for a smaller number, we adjust that list appropriately, depending on the size and scope of funds that are available. Kind of an iterative process, and there are oftentimes things change between now and the end of the session, so there is some we need to have some flexibilities. Sometimes we get surprised on systems getting a bit older quicker than we thought, but indeed that's the list we would work from should the committee look to fund HEPR at the $67.5 million level, and that would be the list we would work from if we needed to do something less. I don't have a 1 through 42.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erlaugh.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. But, I mean, we're not going to be doing this alphabetical when we actually do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we don't start at
no, I didn't
at the so. W's and work our way up, no.
Otherwise, you know, the end of the alphabet's never going to get anything done. All right, thank you.
It's spoken like someone whose name starts with U. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chancellor Rosenstone, happened to notice here that you've got 42,000 graduates and 400,000 students. And can you explain? I mean, it seems like there would be far more graduates for that number of students. And then talk about a little bit the two-year versus four-year ratios, trades versus profession or career.
Chancellor Rosenstone.
Chair Torkelson, members. Good catch on the numbers. Let me decompose the 410 or 420,000 for you. Approximately 240,000 of those students are in degree-seeking programs for credit. The other students are students we train through customized training around the state. And so though they're not seeking degrees, may not even be seeking formal certificates. They may be training programs that are 2 weeks to 6 months, depending on what the firm and those workers need. So part of the 410 are not people that would show up in, quote, our graduation numbers. Mm-hmm. So the ratios are not quite as dismal as you might have suspected, mm-hmm. just looking at the raw numbers. About two-thirds, I believe, of our students are at one of our colleges or universities. Excuse me, colleges, technical colleges or community colleges. Our seven state universities have in degree-seeking programs for credit roughly 83,000 students. Our seven universities have roughly 83,000 students in it, and you can do the math to compare that to other higher education providers in the state of Minnesota. And the remaining of our degree-seeking students for credit are at our technical colleges or universities. And then I would have to dig a little deeper and get back to you to give the program-by-program breakdown within our technical and community colleges in whatever categories you would like, but I can't pull those off the top of my head as to be more responsive to that part of your question, but we can get back to you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I see no more questions this afternoon. I would like to thank everyone for their fine presentations today. I want to get a little bit of clarification on the truck. Is it? It's out in front? We can look at it,
Jared,
but we can't drive it.
You can look at it. I think an offer was made that you can toot the horn. And I bet if you get to up to St. Cloud, we could probably cut some deal for you.
Well, I'm probably better at tooting my own horn. With that, unless members have other questions, this meeting is adjourned.